Member Week is here at Lowe's. That means it's time for MyLowe's Rewards members to save big with up to 40% off hundreds of items like appliances, tools, home essentials, and more. Plus, get free standard shipping. Shop these exclusive member-only savings now through October 15th. Not a rewards member? Join for free today. Free standard shipping not available in Alaska and Hawaii. Exclusions and more terms apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
It's 5:05 and welcome into a Monday edition of the Carolina Journal News Hour. News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. I'm Nick Craig. Good morning to you. We start with breaking international news this morning as the Iranian-backed terror group known as Hamas, operating in the Gaza Strip, has officially released all 20 living Israeli hostages. This happening just moments ago as part of the ongoing Gaza peace deal that was brokered by the Trump administration. We talked about some of those details last week. Part of the ceasefire and ongoing peace deal, which was announced late last week, would require all of the Israeli hostages, most of them civilians, that have been held in captivity in Gaza now for more than 2 years, to finally be released. That process did begin this morning, as it is just after 12 noon in Israel right now, right just after 5 o'clock here on the East Coast. President Donald Trump has landed in Israel and is set to address their parliament coming up here momentarily. We are awaiting that live feed. If that breaks here during the 5 o'clock hour, we'll bring those details to you. This is how the process is unfolding, again, for the 20 living hostages. The first group of seven hostages were released shortly before 8 a.m. local time. The hostages are being transferred by Hamas. They are being then handed over to the Red Cross. The Red Cross is kind of the intermediary force there, who then is delivering them to IDF forces inside of Gaza, where they are then taken via helicopter to Tel Aviv. Seven released earlier this morning. 13 others have just hit that Red Cross checkpoint, being transferred to IDF forces before they are taken via helicopter again to Tel Aviv. So major international breaking news this morning, as the ceasefire has been in effect now for a couple of days. The living hostage transfer, from all accounts and all live feeds that we've got available this morning, has taken place. The president of the United States, in Donald Trump, set to address the Israeli parliament coming up here in just a couple of minutes. This will be the fourth time that a U.S. president has ever done that. He is also expected to get the Israeli Medal of Honor, which I do not believe has ever been given to a U.S. president. We will be awaiting those details. We'll keep a close eye on it right here this morning on the Carolina Journal News Hour. Turning our attention to some other news this morning, a major shocking story hitting the General Assembly last week. Democrat Representative Cecil Brockman was arrested on Wednesday and charged with a litany of issues, including inappropriate activities with a minor and statutory rape. And we are learning additional details after a Friday court appearance. It was originally supposed to happen on Thursday. However, Brockman was rushed to the hospital at some point in the day, either late Wednesday night or early Thursday morning before that court appearance. It's not immediately clear why. However, he did appear in court on Friday via video conference from the hospital. Brockman was laying in a hospital bed when making that, and Guilford County prosecutors said that the alleged victim, who is 15 years old, apparently lived with the 41-year-old Cecil Brockman for a period of time just outside the Atlanta, Georgia area, the city where prosecutors say that the two had met on an online dating app. The 15-year-old then moved with Brockman to High Point sometime during this summer, according to a summary of the allegations that were read out by Guilford County prosecutors Friday afternoon. Brockman has represented High Point in the legislature now for over a decade, so living apparently for some period of time just outside of Atlanta before moving him and this alleged 15-year-old victim back to the High Point area. Guilford County District Attorney in Avery Crump said that Brockman called emergency dispatchers. This is what really got the whole ball rolling back on October the 5th to report a missing friend. Davidson County dispatchers realized that Brockman was referring to a juvenile, and Brockman reported and apparently told a 911 that he had been tracking this person using an app called Life 360. After sending a rideshare vehicle to pick up the juvenile in Davidson County, the driver apparently could not find the alleged victim and canceled the ride, according to details from prosecutors. At that point, High Point Police became involved, and later the State Bureau of Investigation also was called, tagged into this investigation. They launched their own, and that was what led to the charges back last Wednesday. The alleged victim's cell phone was searched and 14 videos of illicit acts. It's not immediately clear if these acts involved Brockman or not were found. The State Bureau of Investigation recognized Brockman in some, but maybe not all of the videos. That footage did show acts consistent with what the victim described to them during an interview, according to Guilford County prosecutors. Brockman tried to contact the victim, who was being treated at a nearby hospital, and attempted to push his way through a locked door at the facility. According to the DA's office, authorities alleged in court documents that he attempted to contact the victim in the hospital and then use his status as a state lawmaker to try and push through those locked doors and get access to an area in which he was not authorized. Now, as we brought you details on that late last week, there has been a cry out from both parties here in North Carolina for Brockman to resign, and it goes all the way to the top, including Democrat Governor Josh Stein, who described the charges as, quote, extremely serious and deeply troubling, saying in a statement in part, while the legal process has yet to play out, it is clear he, referring to Brockman, cannot effectively serve his constituents and should resign immediately. His own party in the North Carolina Democrat Party is also calling for his resignation. The chair of the state Democrat Party in Anderson Clayton releasing a statement on Thursday saying, quote, the North Carolina Democrat Party calls on Representative Brockman to immediately resign. The profound seriousness of these criminal charges make it impossible for him to effectively represent his community. That's from the North Carolina Democrat Party and House Speaker Destin Hall, who is the leader of the North Carolina House. The Republican from Caldwell County said that the situation when he first found out about it was shocking, writing in a post on X. The charges against Representative Brockman are shocking and extremely serious. Given the evidence that's publicly known, he should resign immediately so these charges do not distract from the work of the North Carolina House. We did also get some commentary as well from a former governor, now a turned state Senate, U.S. Senate candidate, I should say, in Roy Cooper, saying, quote, the criminal charges brought against Representative Brockman are disturbing and disqualifying. He should resign immediately. I'll note that all of these calls for resignation against Brockman, all of these were made on Thursday before prosecutors in Guilford County and the Guilford County DA's office laid out the case here, describing a situation in which Brockman allegedly met this 15-year-old on a dating app, was living with that individual outside of Atlanta, Georgia, before moving at the time the 14 and 15-year-old to High Point, North Carolina, where some of these alleged crimes took place. And while Brockman and his office have not said anything in terms of request for comment and have not, at least publicly as of this morning, resigned from their office, a judge has set a bond of $1.05 million in that case. Originally, no bond was set. It is now set at a little over $1 million. And a part of that bond condition is that Brockman would have no contact with the alleged victim. The judge argued that Brockman was a flight risk because the victim is out of state. However, authorities and the judge ended up determining that a bail of just over $1 million would be sufficient in this case. It is not immediately clear what the next steps are here. Brockman pleading not guilty to these charges, was again in a hospital room, in a hospital bed when making that first appearance on Friday. A next court date in this case is scheduled for November the 13th, shocking the North Carolina General Assembly. And from a pure numbers and political standpoint, the North Carolina General Assembly is set to be back in session 1 week from today, with Brockman not being in the General Assembly, not being able to attend, whether he is still in jail or not, or potentially still even in the hospital. That would give Republicans a supermajority in the General Assembly. So we will watch this, a major North Carolina political story, continue to unfold as we kick off the new week here, maybe to get some additional calls for Brockman to resign. Still haven't heard anything publicly from him or his office. We'll be keeping an eye on this story over on our website, carolinajournal.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you. With 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
It's 5:21. Welcome back to the Carolina Journal News Hour. News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. The weather in the eastern half of North Carolina, less than ideal over the weekend as a nor'easter system caused massive flooding from the South Carolina line up to the Virginia line, continuing to hammer the outer banks of North Carolina. That even though we have not had a major landfalling tropical event so far this Atlantic hurricane season, as we begin to wind that season down here in the over the next 60 days or so, the Outer Banks has continued to get hammered. Portions of Highway 12 were overwashed on Sunday with winds gusting between 45 and 55, 60 miles an hour in that area. The North Carolina Department of Transportation providing updates on social media, noting that Highway 12 was closed in parts on Hatteras and Ocracoke over the weekend as crews were beginning the work late in the night yesterday, and will re-begin the process this morning, verifying the structural integrity of Highway 12 to make sure that it is safe for individuals to drive back and forth on. DOT crews, or DOT noted rather, that their crews will be back on scene at daybreak this morning to begin that process and make sure everything is safe there. As homes continue to collapse, we've seen close to a dozen homes collapse in the Outer Banks thus far this season, as that nor'easter did bring some wind, rain, and a very high surf, a lot of beach erosion all the way up and down the North Carolina coast. We'll continue to keep an eye on those details right here on the Carolina Journal News Hour. Keeping our thread, keeping our discussion this morning on Mother Nature, it has now been over a year since Hurricane Helene devastated businesses, communities, and families across western North Carolina. This morning, we will dive into the craft brewing industry, which is incredibly popular in western North Carolina, as they continue on their road to recovery. Western North Carolina has long been integral to the state's craft brewing industry, accounting for roughly one quarter of breweries in the state and playing an outsized role in shaping North Carolina's ever-popular beer culture. So when Hurricane Helene hit the state last year, the industry was, as you can imagine, severely impacted. Just Asheville itself is home to over 50 of North Carolina's 430 breweries that are licensed and exist statewide, and has been named Beer City USA four different times. Because of some of the destruction and devastation from the storm, there was not potable, safe drinking water for 54 days in the immediate aftermath of Hurricane Helene. And with that, not only did you not have drinking water, but of course, all of the flooding and damage from Hurricane Helene that took effect. In the immediate aftermath, craft brewers across North Carolina and the U.S. played an important role in relief efforts for their local communities. Individual breweries across the West acted as distribution centers to deliver critical supplies to the region, as well as donations poured in from brewers all around the country to help get their fellow breweries back up and running. While awaiting IRS tax exemption status for a new charitable foundation that it established in response to Helene, the North Carolina Craft Brewers Guild coordinated many of these donations under its Pouring for Neighbors campaign. Reflecting on the campaign in an interview with Carolina Journal, Craft Brewer Guild Executive Director Lisa Parker said, quote, "In the beginning, because we didn't have the foundation open, what we did was encourage everybody to donate their proceeds to boots on the ground operations, things that included recovery and rescue operations. That very first month, it was bigger than a brewery issue, and we knew that. So we wanted to channel the help for our very broad national industry towards helping our communities. Despite a very underwhelming federal response from the storm, most Western North Carolina breweries fortunately have since physically reopened, with all but five tap rooms having reopened. However, craft breweries in the region are still suffering from Helene's lingering impact on tourism." Lisa Parker told the Carolina Journal, quote, "I think the biggest impact that we are seeing to date is still the lack of tourism. There's still a lot of work to be done to get back to even close to where it was before. But the mountains have reopened and the mountains are here and they're ready for you to visit." As a result, recovery efforts have shifted focus to rekindling tourism in Western North Carolina as we've hit that one-year mark, alongside Governor Josh Stein's tourism initiative, which is called Rediscover the Unforgettable. The Craft Brewers Guild has launched its own effort to direct visitors and money back to Western North Carolina breweries and the larger economy as a whole. They are currently running a sweepstakes that rewards visits to multiple state craft breweries with a chance to win a beer trip centered in Asheville. Additionally, the Guild recently held one of its industry events in Asheville, which brought over 100 members of the industry out to the mountains so that those individuals could see for themselves that Western North Carolina was once again open for business. However, renewed tourism is unlikely to happen immediately, making up for lost revenue caused by months of closure and limited to no tourism in the immediate aftermath of the storm. Lisa Parker described it as, quote, "a huge hurdle to overcome for small businesses." However, the Craft Brewers Guild has stepped up to help some of those struggling breweries clear that hurdle. The foundation, North Carolina Craft Brewers Foundation, has already distributed more than $250,000 in business recovery grants, extending a much needed lifeline until tourism in Western North Carolina rebounds. When asked what the next year of recovery may look like for craft brewers in Western North Carolina, Lisa Parker affirmed that the Craft Brewers Guild is committed to supporting the recovery of craft breweries in the long run and in the face of future disasters. She told the Carolina Journal, "We know that other hardships are going to impact our state down the road. So this foundation and this fund is going to be available for that not only now, but in the future." She concluded by reflecting on craft breweries' support for their communities in Western North Carolina in the immediate aftermath of Hurricane Helene, saying, "These are small businesses who in many cases are family-owned and operated, and they give so much of their own time and business resources to come together to make life better for others in their community and in their state. They are truly special businesses." We will, of course, keep our very close eye on some of these recovery efforts and relief efforts that continue to take place in Western North Carolina. Our latest feature this morning highlighting the very important and very large craft brewing industry that does exist in the mountains of our state. You can read additional details this morning on our website, carolinajournal.com. The headline story, NC Craft Brewers Guild reflects on 1 year of Helene recovery. It's 5:36. Welcome back to the Carolina Journal News Hour. News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. Recapping our big breaking international news this morning. Hamas, the Iranian-backed terror group operating in the Gaza Strip, has released all 20 living Israeli hostages earlier this morning, East Coast time, as part of the Gaza peace deal, which was brokered and announced by the Trump administration late last week. These Israeli hostages, most of them civilians, have been held in captivity in Gaza now for more than 2 years. So just after 8 a.m. local time this morning in the Middle East, the first group of seven hostages were released. Those hostages were transferred by Hamas to the Red Cross, who then went through the process of delivering them to Israeli forces inside of Gaza. The seven were released earlier than the other 13 had just made their way to the handoff between the Hamas and the Red Cross shortly before 5 o'clock Eastern time this morning. President Donald Trump is set to address the Israeli parliament coming up here shortly this morning. He will be the fourth president to ever do so, and is also set to get the Israeli Medal of Freedom or Medal of Honor. I'm not sure exactly what they call it, but he will be the first U.S. president to get that, as that will be coming up as it is now just after 12:30 in Israel this morning here on the East Coast. We will keep an eye on the details throughout the day right here on News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. It's now 5:38. You're listening to the Carolina Journal News Hour. Over the last 6 or 7 months, we've been talking a lot about tariffs over on our website, carolinajournal.com, and right here on the Carolina Journal News Hour, as it affects a variety of industries across the state of North Carolina. This morning, we turn our attention to the pharmaceutical industry. To walk us through some of the details and what tariffs are wreaking havoc on that industry look like, Katie Zender, carolinajournal.com, joins us on the News Hour. Katie, good morning to you. Thanks for the time. Tell us a little bit about what you're tracking with pharmaceuticals tariffs here across the Tar Heel State.
Hi, good morning, Nick. Yeah, thank you for having me on. So pharmaceuticals is one of the biggest trade commodities here in North Carolina. It's also one of the biggest manufacturing industries here in the state. And so it's actually been the number one trade commodity for the last couple of years here. It's been the number one export since about 2020, and it's been the number one import as well for the last year. But about the last week of September, President Trump announced a 100% tariff on imports of pharmaceuticals that was set to begin on October 1st, which we're, of course, about a week out from now, a little over a week out from. And we really haven't seen that come into effect yet. So he announced this in a Truth Social post, but just because he put something on the internet doesn't mean that it's, you know, law or that it's actually coming into play.
Sure.
So we have yet to see that actually enacted, but this announcement applies only to name brand pharmaceuticals and not generic medications. And he also mentions in this post that he made that it does not apply to basically any manufacturing facilities in the United States. So there is a caveat there. So any pharmaceutical companies that have plants or manufacturing facilities in the United States will be exempt from this 100% import tariff. So some of the larger manufacturers like Eli Lilly and GSK, who actually have facilities here in North Carolina, have been preparing for this since Trump took office in January, because obviously they knew that this was coming, and so they've been investing in manufacturing plants and in R&D and in all these different areas to kind of avoid this caveat, or to use this caveat to avoid the tariffs. And but some of the smaller manufacturers that only produce one or two drugs are going to be feeling the greater impact of these tariffs if and when they're implemented, because they do rely more heavily on contract manufacturers that are overseas. And so, you know, as I mentioned, Eli Lilly and GSK are some of the larger manufacturers. Eli Lilly has a manufacturing facility in the Research Triangle Park area, and then GSK has an R&D site in Zebulon.
And Katie, you look at some of these major pharmaceutical companies that you're noting have presences here in the state of North Carolina. What kind of economic impact are we looking in terms of exports with these pharmaceuticals?
And so, as I mentioned before, Nick, the industry has been the state's number one export since 2020, according to data from the Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina. It's also the first year that pharmaceuticals have been the state's top import. And so that was, you know, started in 2024. And those trends have continued. Both the import and export trends have continued year to date through July data for this year. So it's been, you know, the top export for about 4 years now, and it's been the top import for the last year. And we're seeing those trends continue according to data from the EDPNC. So the exports have climbed about $7.4 billion through July, and up from $6.8 billion, which is a gain of about 9%, according to the EDPNC. And so the sector made upwards of nearly 29% of total exports over the same period, according to that EDPNC data. And so, Nick, I got to speak with Joseph Harris. He's a fiscal policy analyst here at the John Locke Foundation. He said that, you know, North Carolina's pharmaceutical products have nearly exceeded the state's total for all of 2024, with much of the surge concentrated in January, February, and March, as firms accelerated shipments in anticipation of the federal tariff on pharmaceutical drugs. And you can read the rest of his quote online, but it's not only a major export, but it's a major import as well. As I noted, for the last year, it's been the top import to North Carolina. Imports rose from $9.3 billion to $17.6 billion, nearly a 90% increase over the last year, according to EDPNC data. In 2024, pharmaceutical imports totaled $19 billion, as compared to $12.2 billion in 2023, $5.2 billion in 2022. And so year-to-date through July, the pharmaceuticals accounted for approximately 29% of all total imports to North Carolina. And then, once again, Joseph Harris said the proposed 100% tariff on branded and patented pharmaceutical imports could pose serious economic consequences. This issue is especially relevant to North Carolina, where pharmaceuticals are the state's largest trade sector. And then you can read the rest of his quote, but that's what he had to say about the issue.
You know, Katie, as you go through some of these numbers, pretty remarkable. Just $5.2 billion in 2022, all the way up to $19 billion in 2024. I mean, you're talking about incredible amounts of growth in a sector, nearly a 90% increase in certain cases when you break it down inside the pharmaceutical industry. While folks may have a love-hate relationship with Big Pharma, we know that there's a kind of an ongoing discussion about that at the national level. This is a huge driver of business in North Carolina.
Right, exactly. Yeah, this is one of the number one, you know, manufacturing industries in North Carolina, and we have seen some huge jumps in these numbers. You know, so we'll have to keep an eye on this and see if these tariffs are going to be implemented and what impact that's going to have on the industry, because it's certain to have a pretty big impact if that 100% tariff is implemented.
No question about it. We'll keep an eye on that. We've actually got some pretty good infographics over on our story this morning where folks can maybe visualize some of these numbers and understand it a little bit better. Katie, where can folks go and get those details?
Right. They can read this full story with all the quotes and charts and numbers at carolinajournal.com.
We appreciate the details this morning. Katie Zender from carolinajournal.com joins us on the Carolina Journal News Hour.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with a Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Good morning again. It's 5:50. Welcome back to the Carolina Journal News Hour. News Talk 1110-99.3 WBT. We continue to track severe weather across North Carolina. Fortunately, the state has not dealt with a major landfalling hurricane or tropical storm this season. However, the nor'easter that went through the eastern half of the state throughout the weekend has caused some additional issues in the Outer Banks, who have been getting just absolutely slammed thus far this hurricane season due to some of the conditions from that nor'easter. Portions of Highway 12 do remain closed this morning due to overwash, according to a Facebook post from the North Carolina Department of Transportation. Yesterday afternoon, Highway 12 is closed in that area. Crews were out late last night assessing the status of the road, making sure that it was safe to drive on, and then crews will be back out once again at daybreak this morning to continue all of the checks and making sure that it's stable and whatnot, and we'll hopefully have that reopened as we watch some of the devastation from what have we seen? Close to a dozen homes collapse thus far in the Outer Banks. We'll keep an eye on the rest of the Atlantic hurricane season right here on the Carolina Journal News Hour. Continuing one of our big breaking North Carolina stories this morning, Democrat State Representative Cecil Brockman made his first court appearance on Friday. The Democrat representative was arrested last Wednesday and was charged with two counts of statutory rape with a child and two additional counts of indecent liberties with a child as well. Brockman did appear in court via a video link from a hospital bed, and Guilford County prosecutors said that the alleged victim, who is 15 years old, lived with the 41-year-old in Cecil Brockman for a period of time near Atlanta, Georgia. That's where the prosecutors say that the two had met on an online dating app. They then both moved back to the High Point area sometime over the summer of this year, according to a summary of allegations that were proposed by the prosecutors. And looking at some of the other details, the Guilford County District Attorney and Avery Crump said that Brockman called emergency dispatchers back on October the 5th to report a missing friend, is what he told 911. Davidson County dispatchers realized that Brockman was referring to a juvenile, and the state representative told 911 that he'd been tracking the person using an app called Life 360. After sending a rideshare vehicle to pick up the juvenile in Davidson County, the driver said that he, couldn't find the alleged victim and then canceled the ride. That's according to details from prosecutors. At that point, High Point Police became involved and later tapped their law enforcement partners on the State Bureau of Investigation, gave them a heads up where they launched an investigation as well. The alleged victim's cell phone was searched and 14 videos of illicit sexual acts were found, according to prosecutors. The State Bureau of Investigation recognized Brockman in those videos. That footage showed acts consistent with what the victim described to them during an interview and obviously led to them pursuing charges against the state representative. Brockman tried to contact the victim, who was being treated at a hospital in North Carolina, and allegedly attempted to push his way through a locked door, according to the district attorney, and used his status as a state lawmaker to try and gain information about the whereabouts of that victim. Brockman and a legislative aide that he has have yet to respond to any public comment as to these allegations that were announced last Wednesday and the charges that have since been levied against him. Lawmakers on both sides of the political aisle here in North Carolina have called for Brockman to resign. That includes individuals like Democrat Governor Josh Stein, who described the charges as, quote, extremely serious and deeply troubling. Writing in a statement, quote, while the legal process has yet to play out, it's clear he, referring to Brockman, cannot effectively serve his constituents and should resign immediately. The state Democrat Party also chiming in. Anderson Clayton, who is the head of the North Carolina Democrat Party, posted a statement last week saying, quote, the North Carolina Democrat Party calls on Representative Brockman to immediately resign. The profound seriousness of these criminal charges make it impossible for him to effectively represent his community. House Speaker Destin Hall, the Republican from Caldwell County, also called the situation shocking and urged Brockman to resign, posting on X, quote, "The charges against Representative Brockman are shocking and extremely serious. Given the evidence that's publicly known, he should resign immediately so these charges do not distract from the work of the North Carolina House." Other comments calling for his resignation have come in as well. They include people like House Minority Leader and Robert Reeves, who is the leading Democrat in the North Carolina House. Former governor turned Senate candidate Roy Cooper calling the situation disturbing and disqualifying, calling on Brockman to resign as well. We have not heard anything publicly from Brockman since the Friday court appearance, again, which took place in the hospital. There was a period of time in which Brockman tried to ask the judge to speak. There was about a 15-minute recess, and after that recess, Brockman's attorney told the judge that, in fact, Brockman was not going to be speaking, at least during that Friday court hearing. There is another court hearing scheduled coming up on November the 13th, as Brockman is currently being held on a $1+ million bond. We will continue to watch this major North Carolina political story unfold and some of the political impacts as the General Assembly is slated to be back in Raleigh 1 week from today on October the 20th. We will keep our eyes on all of the details right here on the Carolina Journal News Hour, and of course continuing coverage over on our website, carolinajournal.com. That's going to do it for a busy Monday edition of the Carolina Journal News Hour. WBT News is next, followed by Good Morning BT. We're back with you tomorrow morning 5 to 6 right here on News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT.